Today on Vox Talks Economics, the economic impact of a green transition. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember, subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. Every economy that uses non-renewable resources, so every economy, must go through a green transition at some point. We can understand the choices policymakers must make, but can we quantify what those choices will mean for their economies and for the welfare of the citizens that make up those economies? Well, that's what a new paper from CPR attempts to do for small open economies. Florencia Araudo of Carlos III University, Madrid, is one of the authors. She joins me now. Florencia, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim.
For those of our listeners who aren't used to these economics terms, what exactly is a small open economy? What sort of countries are we talking about today?
So a small open economy is an economy that participates in international trade, but is small enough compared to the trading partners. So their policies cannot affect prices, interest rates, or income. So in other words, we can say that these small open economies are price takers. Now, when we talk about the small open economies, we could be referring either to developing economies such as Norway or Sweden, or we can talk about emerging markets or emerging countries. And in our paper, this is the case. In particular, our quantitative exercise would be based on emerging markets. And in particular, we will calibrate our model to Chile, that is a representative emerging country.
And typically, for these emerging economies, how do they compare in their adoption of clean sources of energy compared to developed economies?
Most emerging economies are lagging behind in the adoption of clean sources of energy when we compare them to more developed economies. So if we look at historical data of energy consumption in different countries, we can see a large gap in the share of renewable energies among different countries. So, for instance, in Sweden and Norway, that are countries that started this green transition over 60 years ago, we see that renewable energy accounts for 2/3 of total energy consumed, and also the consumption of polluting energy is clearly trending down. However, this is not the case in emerging economies. So, in these countries, and specifically in Latin American countries, we see that this share is much smaller, and also there is a lot of heterogeneity among countries. For instance, for the average of Latin American countries, we see that the share of renewable energy consumption is around 30%. So we see that they are lagging behind in this adoption of clean energy.
Can we blame the government for this? Is it because of a lack of the government's investment in renewable energy infrastructure or a lack of policy incentives to develop it?
Yes, exactly. So to boost this transition, these economies need to allocate resources to the exploitation of green technology and also to build the necessary infrastructure or the necessary capacity to use this green energy. However, these economies have invested very little in the development of installed capacity for renewable energy over the last 20 years. Okay, this is the case in countries from Latin America, Africa, and the Middle East. And this is a striking difference with countries from Europe and Asia. But at the same time, we have that these countries lack of public policies to incentivize this green transition or to incentivize the investment in infrastructure for the production of green energy. So in most of these emerging economies, carbon taxation is inexistent or is really low. And there is no carbon trading markets. And even some of them, these countries still have subsidies to produce fossil-based energy. So there is a lot to be done in this matter.
So rule of thumb, we'll be going into this in a lot more detail. But roughly, if there's no investment in this infrastructure, then as demand for green energy rises, what would we expect to be the effect on the economy of these countries?
If these countries want to accelerate the green transition and the demand for green energy increases, but the infrastructure is not there or is not enough, then the supply may not be able to react fast enough to this increase in demand. And these countries may face bottlenecks in the production of green energy that will result in increases in marginal cost and then an increase in inflationary pressures in these countries. Now, this is not the only source of inflationary pressures in these countries, because if governments want to incentivize or to accelerate this green transition, then they may implement fiscal or monetary policies with this objective, and this may put further pressure on the inflation rate. For instance, if they introduce or increase carbon taxation, this may rise the prices of polluting energy, and this, again, will contribute to further inflationary pressures in those countries.
Our next step, I guess, is to put some numbers on this, but let's see what the model says.
Can and should monetary policy accelerate the green transition? When we asked that question in April 2019, we discovered some surprising answers. Listen to the episode called A Green Monetary Policy.
Okay, Florencia, so let's have a look at your model. What kind of model are you using here to characterize what happens in these economies?
Yeah, we propose a general equilibrium model to investigate inflationary dynamics of the green transition in a small open economy with perfect foresight, where this green transformation is the transition from a fossil-based production into a greener economy. So it means to an economy that relies more on renewable energy. So to do it, we adapt the canonical New Keynesian small open economy model to incorporate directive technical change and the production of green energy. So our domestic economy is populated by households, firms that produce intermediate and final goods in the domestic economy, and they interact with firms that produce green energy, the government that sets the fiscal policy, and an independent central bank that follows a Taylor rule for the short-term interest rate. And on top of this small open economy interacts with the rest of the world. That is the one that determines the demand for our home goods or for the home goods of these small open economies, and also provides with imports of final goods and brown energy to the emerging markets. Now, departing from the existing models, in our model, the production of intermediate input depends not only on traditional inputs of production, such as labor and capital, but also on total energy. Now, in the short term, we have that the substitutability between these different inputs is low, but it can be affected in longer horizons through directive technical change. Okay, so here the intuition is that firms have a stock of researchers and they decide how to assign them in order to improve the efficiency in the use of energy or the efficiency in the use of traditional inputs of production. In the model, this gives rise to endogenous growth. And also, I talk about total energy. I am referring to a composite of brown and green energy, where brown energy represents fossil-based energy and green energy represents renewable energy. Now, the nominal frictions in the model allow us to study the direct impact of the green transition on the inflation rate, but also the indirect impact through the response of fiscal and monetary policies. And finally, only one more detail about the model is that this model also captures some of the main features of emerging markets. For instance, these countries take as given the international prices of final goods and brown energy, and they are subject to financial constraints that are represented by a positive premium on the external debt.
What assumptions are you making about the availability of what we're calling brown energy and green energy here?
Green energy in the model is produced domestically by combining a specific green capital stock together with the stock of public green capital that the firm takes as given and a factor that is in fixed limited supply. When I talk about public and private green capital, here we assume that these two green capitals are complements rather than substitutes, because our intuition is that public green capital is mainly infrastructure for the development of the green energy sector, while private green capital is mostly capital goods. Now, on the other hand, for brown energy, we assume that it is exogenously given for the small open economy. So the small open economy receives an endowment of brown energy that can be traded in international markets. Mm-hmm. And in particular, it can be exported or imported at the international price. And in our calibration that, remember, is for Chile, we mm-hmm. have that the small open economy imports brown energy because this is the case in the data.
You mentioned that you use data from Chile to calibrate this. How did you calibrate it?
Yeah, so we solved the model with perfect foresight, and we assume that the economy starts this transition from an equilibrium that is consistent with an initial steady state. So our calibration strategy consists of first, take some parameters from the literature, some parameters that are well established in the literature, and then we calibrate the rest of them to target business cycle first order moments for Chile in that initial steady state. So in other words, our calibration tries to reproduce the data for Chile in the initial steady state, so before the transition takes place. For that, we use data, annual data for the period from 1960 to 2019. Mm-hmm. And for instance, our calibration targets the ratio of public debt to GDP of 60% and the annual inflation rate of 4%. And in our calibration, the elasticity of substitution between traditional inputs of production and energy that I was mentioning in the description of the model. So the parameter that characterizes that substitutability implies that these inputs are complements in production, while green versus brown energy are substitutes.
So when the global price of brown energy rises, which we assume it will, without any policy interventions, what happens in this economy that you've created?
Yeah, so to study this or that scenario, we assume a 60-year transition that ends with a permanent 30% increase in the price of brown energy. Now, the increase in the international price of brown energy accelerates the adoption of green energy. Mm. So as a result, the economy moves towards a new steady state where the ratio of green over brown energy increases by 40%. In the short run, we see that when the price of brown energy increases, firms first try to substitute brown for green energy, and then the demand for green energy increases, and as a result, the price of green energy also increases. So as a result, this firm faces higher marginal costs that end up translating into higher inflation or greenflation in this economy. So in particular, this generates a peak of inflation rate of 7.8% in the short run. When firms try to or face this increase in the inflation rate, they reallocate researchers in order to improve the efficiency in the use of energy, because remember now, this energy is more expensive. So as this reallocation of researchers takes place, the productivity of traditional inputs of production slows down, and this discourages physical capital accumulation. So as a result, investment falls and output falls, and at the end, this green transition is recessionary in the short term. So to give you some numbers, the falling output is quite persistent, and it reaches a maximum of 7.8%. And then in the long run, as this economy approximates the new steady state, then we see that green energy becomes more efficiently used and its path reverses, and also the productivity of traditional factors increases as well.
Well, this greenflation is pretty bad news, clearly. So can a central bank do anything about it?
So the monetary policy stance affects the transitional dynamics of inflation. Mm-hmm. In our small open economy, if we consider a stricter monetary policy stance, so if the central bank wants to fight against this greenflation, what we consider is a higher value for the Taylor-Hall coefficient of the from the inflation deviations from the target. And if this is the case, we see that the central bank is able to moderate the greenflation, but it comes at the cost of higher short-run losses for output. So the central bank is able to reduce greenflation, but output falls more. So given the inability of the monetary policy to moderate output losses, then we turn to study the role of the fiscal policy. So we investigate how fiscal policy changes can induce transitional dynamics towards a greener economy. So to do it, we study three different scenarios. where the international price of brown energy remains constant. Okay, in particular, we are going to study a scenario where there is increase in carbon taxes, and then we compare it with an increase in subsidies to the green sector or public investment in the green sector.
Okay, well, let's look at those then. What about a carbon tax? How does that affect the economy?
Well, we find that carbon taxes can accelerate the green transition, but this comes at the cost of, again, inflationary pressures and output losses in the short and medium run. Mm. In particular, inflation increases in the short run from 4 to 7%, while output falls persistently with a maximum fall of 5%. Now, the drivers of this inflation and output losses are quite similar to the ones that I described for the case of an increase in the price of brown energy. So we have that when taxation of brown energy increases, this also implies an increase in marginal costs and inflation. As a result, firms try to substitute brown for green energy and try to reallocate researchers. And this discourages investment. And again, we have a short-term recession in the economy. Now, the main difference with the previous case is that overall, domestic demand falls short of domestic supply. So in order to have international markets to clear, we have a depreciation of the real exchange rate that also increases the domestic price of brown energy and accelerates further this green transition.
Okay, so let's try other types of fiscal policy. What happens if you subsidize green energy or you use fiscal policy to increase investment in infrastructure?
Yeah, so those policy tools, the increase in subsidies and investment in the green sector, generate very distinct transitional dynamics compared to the one that I just described.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, they have the potential to accelerate the green transition without generating greenflation and generating minimum output losses. However, the downside is that the ratio of green over brown energy increases mostly due to an expansion of the green sector, but these policies are not able to crowd out the usage of brown energy, and they don't increase the productivity or the efficiency in the use of energy as a whole. In particular, in the case of subsidies, we have that the pace of the green transition is much slower relative to the case of carbon taxes, and it implies elevated green energy prices. And this is the case because subsidies stimulate the demand of green energy, but without improving the productivity in the generation of green energy. Instead, if the government increases investment in a specific green capital, then we have that green energy prices decrease in the long run. And this is the case because the government is boosting the productivity in the production of green energy. So this fall in the price of green energy implies a reduction in firms' marginal cost, and this improves the productivity of traditional factors, expanding private investment and generating even output gains. Okay, so notice that this is the only case where we may see output gains along the transition. So as you can see, distinct fiscal instruments imply very different transitional dynamics.
Now, potentially, it sounds like there's some pretty bad news therefore, the citizens of these countries. You've also done a welfare analysis, haven't you? What is the welfare analysis for these different policies? What are we calling welfare here, first of all?
Yeah, so we calculate welfare here using a consumption equivalence measure. So we adopt as a benchmark the consumption level in the initial steady state and compute how much consumers are willing to give up of the initial steady state consumption in order to reach a level of welfare along the transition that is comparable to their initial steady state.
Mm-hmm.
So if this amount that consumers are willing to give up is positive, then this implies that consumers are worse off along the transition. But if this amount is negative instead, this represents welfare improvements along the transition.
Florencia, is there a free lunch here? Is it possible to make this green transition without those consumers suffering welfare losses?
Well, in our benchmark economy, the green transition is associated with welfare losses, I have to say. But anyhow, using fiscal policy to obtain the green transition is less harmful in terms of consumption. So in particular, the best fiscal instrument is an increase in public investment in the green infrastructure, and this actually delivers welfare gains, while the worst policy tool is given by carbon taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Let me just tell you that an underlying assumption here is that as we are talking about the small open economies, we assume that the contribution of their use of brown energy to total or to global pollution is minimal. And then also the externality from this consumption to household is minimal. But in the paper, we also consider two extensions. The first one is one situation where more or a higher ratio of brown to total energy has detrimental effects on consumption. Okay, so here the intuition could be that more brown energy implies more pollution, and this affects health that ends up reducing consumption per household. So under this situation, if this negative externality is high enough, then the ranking of welfare among the different fiscal instruments change completely. So in this case, carbon taxes can be the most welfare improving policy. And in this case, green subsidies have the highest negative impact on welfare, because their adoption does accelerate the consumption of brown energy. It only expands the consumption of green energy. And finally, we also consider an extension with sustainability premium. So we say, okay, what happens if now effective consumption increases when the ratio of green energy over total energy is higher? So with this assumption, with this positive externality, we have that all the transitions imply welfare gains and public investment in green capital again, outperforms the other fiscal measures as the best policy tool to induce the green transformation.
Nevertheless, it does sound like there are some difficult policy discussions to be had and decisions to be made. The discussion within those countries about what citizens are prepared to sacrifice in order to achieve this green transition.
Exactly. So in a nutshell, our analysis suggests that there is no easy way towards the green metamorphosis of a small open economy. So if the goal is to reduce brown energy usage globally, then the appropriate instrument is to increase carbon taxation, but the cost to pay is greenflation and short-term output losses. But instead, if we assume no externality from brown energy usage, or consider that consumption increases from using relatively more green energy, then public investment in green capital provides a transition with no inflation, more green energy usage, and little output and fiscal costs.
Policymakers, be warned, you're going to be having some difficult conversations in the near future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper is called The Green Metamorphosis of a Small Open Economy, and the authors, alongside Florencia, are Evi Papa and Enan Siwani. It is discussion paper 17863 at CPR if you want to get it that way.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the best new research in economics every week, so subscribe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. Next time on Vox Talks, when elections become more important, how does that affect our appetite for news?